Let's do it. Thinking Real Estate, Laura Dwyer-Schletke. I believe Bill is here, too.
I am.
Good morning, Bill.
What would the world be without one?
Good morning, Laura.
So, beautiful day in paradise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought I've had a couple of interesting questions this week, and one was a simple. I think it's a simple one, so I'll ask it, and then we'll get into a more complicated topic. But Bill, can you put if you have a shared driveway, not a joint driveway, can you put a fence down the middle of it?
So you said this is a simple question?
Yeah.
Well, you're highly intelligent, so you probably look at it really deeply. So
if it's a true joint driveway, the answer is absolutely not. Each person has a reciprocal easement across the other person's other property owner's property, and they can't fence it off. They can't block it. They can't do anything that would interfere with the use. When I say interfere, which would unreasonably interfere with the use by the other owner of the joint driveway.
Okay, now, so the question was a shared driveway, not a joint driveway. So a definition of a joint driveway is one where two people use it for accessing. Now, this isn't the formal definition, but two people use the same driveway to access the back of their property. Shared driveway are two driveways that are next to each other.
No, wrong. A shared driveway is of necessity a joint. It's one and the same thing. You're just talking about two driveways that might be adjacent to each other, but
correct.
They're not. Neither party has an interest in the other party's driveway. That's what you're talking about.
Correct.
Yeah. As long as it's not a joint driveway, as long as it's not a shared driveway, as long as that driveway is entirely on my property and the other property owner that has the driveway immediately adjacent to mine has no rights in and to my driveway, then I can put a fence up. Along again, I have to check with the local ordinance. What's my height requirement? Presumably, I can put up a boundary fence. Now, understand, when you put up that boundary fence on the driveway, it's got to be on your, on the person doing it. It's got to be on my driveway, the posts, the fence, the concrete that's holding the posts underneath the ground. None of that can cross over the boundary line onto my neighbor's property. If I do, that's a trespass, and I'm liable for the trespass, which means I'll have to remove it. I actually had a case where I had clients, this is about 10, 12 years ago, not in the city of Jackson, but in Jackson County, where built a fence, and the fence itself, the above ground portion of the fence, was entirely on my client's property. Unfortunately, what they had done was they had put the concrete underneath, holding the posts, so that a portion of that concrete, under subterranean concrete, was across the boundary line. And fortunately, we were able to work it out that they didn't have to remove it. But you got to be real careful. And you, in order to put up a boundary fence, you must have a survey. You got to go hire a surveyor, survey what that line is, make certain that everything that you erect on your property is entirely on your property.
Did you have to pay some money? Did you have to pay some money, Bill?
No, they worked it out. There was an issue of lake frontage, who owned which portion of the lake frontage. We had two, and I will tell you that you can have two surveyors survey the same property,
right,
and they'll come up with a different line. And
sure.
On this particular property, this is a subdivision set up way back in like the 19-teens or the 20s,
mm-hmm.
And all they did was lay out the corners of the subdivision, and then on the plat, put the lot lines in without going out and surveying the lot lines. Well, what happened is over the years, everybody built the lot lines weren't perpendicular to the lakefront, but everybody's house was. So your house, it was like a trapezoid, at least on it was a trapezoid. And so your house faced the lake, but your lot line angled over. And everybody just treated what they use the stuff straight down to the lake. So one after the other, after the other, after the other lot, all of these lot owners were encroaching on the boundaries, across the boundaries as laid out in the plat. And so one surveyor actually started from one corner post from the government survey. Another one started elsewhere. And now all of a sudden they don't join in the center. And we've got a parcel of land called a gore where now we're fighting over that gore. We ultimately worked it out with a settlement. So let's jump back to your question, though, Laura. There's no difference between a shared driveway and a joint driveway. I need to know who's got what rights in the other, with the adjoining property owner's property. Do I have a right to use a portion of his property for a driveway or not? If I do, I can't block it off. If I don't have a, if my neighbor doesn't have a right to my use my any portion of my driveway, I can block it off. Now, remember, we're dealing with easements and driveways that were created by an instrument, typically a deed. There are times when someone has acquired an easement by prescription, you know, using it without the permission of the adjoining property owner, openly, notoriously, without under a claim of right, without permission for a period of 15 years, and now I acquire a right to use the other person's property. That's a different issue, though.
Okay.
All right. So much for a simple question.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one's far more complicated. I can't wait to hear.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So title insurance. I wanted to talk about title insurance. Why do we need title insurance on a property? There's owner's title insurance and mortgage title insurance, and the seller typically pays for the owner's title insurance, and the buyer typically pays for the mortgage title insurance. Can you tell me what the difference are between the two and why we need them?
Well, that's a question that I asked a guy by the name of Ron Fletcher, who was the owner of Central Title in Ann Arbor. I asked that identical question back in 1973 when I started teaching real estate law to lawyers, brokers, and salespeople. And I said, Ron, why do I have an owner's policy and a mortgage policy? Because on my owner's policy, if my owner's policy is $200,000, and I have a mortgage policy of $150,000, and now there's a complete failure of title, the mortgage company, the mortgagee, the bank is going to get paid $150,000. All I'm going to get paid is $50,000. I'm not going to get $200,000 because I will have gotten $150,000 benefit from payment of a mortgage that I owed. So why do I do both? And Ron never gave me a good answer to that. He said that's just the way that it's done. So now we have owner's policies and we have mortgage policies. Now understand that if you refinance, there'll be a new mortgage policy. There won't be an owner's policy that's issued, but the mortgage company, the bank, will get a new mortgage policy. Let's assume that it's a sale, and now again, it's all negotiable. If it's not in a purchase agreement, then the purchaser is going to have to go out and get his own title insurance, and he'd be a fool to buy without getting title insurance. That's first order business. But virtually every agreement, every form agreement, will provide that the owner will order and pay for a title commitment and the title policy to follow once the closing happens, ensuring marketable title in the purchaser. That's the owner's policy. The mortgage policy ensures the mortgagee that in the event there's a failure of title or a title defect, that the mortgagee is protected. Also understand that the owner's policy is a rate which is established by the title insurance company with the insurance commission in Lansing. So it's not negotiable. You sit there and as an owner, you're paying whatever the per thousand dollar rate is with the title insurance company. Now, the mortgage policy, every title insurance company will give a discounted rate for the mortgage policy because there's no additional work. There's just additional risk by paying the mortgagee. Even then, I would argue that there's no additional risk. But my point here is you get the simultaneous issue discount from the title insurance company, which is typically 60% off of the owner's policy cost. So the borrower, the purchaser, is paying much less for the mortgagee policy, the policy to protect the mortgagee. This is something to watch out for because some brokers, some representing a buyer and some representing a seller, that what they will do is they will insist that they use a title insurance company other than the one that the seller is using. I should have said just the buyer. So now all of a sudden, if you have a split closing, if you've got one title insurance company issuing the owner's policy and another issuing the mortgagee policy, you don't get the simultaneous issue rate. So now the buyer is paying more for title insurance than the buyer would ordinarily have to pay. And if you got a $300,000, $400,000 house, getting a 60% discount on your title insurance for the mortgage is a pretty substantial chunk of change. Okay? So that,
does the buyer's agent need to disclose it to the buyer?
The buyer's agent should, but remember that they're usually referring the insurance out to an affiliated company. In other words, the broker's got an interest in the title insurance company, and Truth in Lending requires that relationship be disclosed to the buyer. It's required by federal law that it be disclosed. Now, if it's not...
But not the dollar amount.
What's that?
I said the relationship has to be disclosed, but not the dollar amount difference.
They have to show, that's correct. They have to show that it's an affiliate, but if I see it as an affiliate, and the buyer's agent doesn't tell me that if the mortgage policy was issued through the same company issuing the owner's policy, I'd get a big break on the policy amount. I think that's negligence on the part of the buyer's agent, or maybe even something, a deliberate act that's to the detriment of the buyer. But, yeah, I mean, every buyer's agent, every buyer's broker should know that, in fact, the simultaneous issue rate comes from the same company that's issuing the owner's policy.
Right. Well, but I bet they don't. But
Well, when's the last time you ever had a split closing where you insisted that the title insurance be issued by someone other than the company issuing the owner's policy?
Where I've insisted, never.
Right.
But when it's happening more and more right now, because we are seeing a lot of out-of-town realtors coming and selling our properties here in Jackson.
Right.
They use their affiliated title company from the area that they're in.
Well, I don't care if they're using it for the owner. In other words, are they using it for the seller?
They're using it for the buyer.
But they're refusing to accept the owner's policy. In other words, they're insisting that the owner's policy be issued by someone other than, let's say, American or Metropolitan?
The owner's policy is up to the seller, who they're going to use.
In a lot of my commercial deals, if I'm representing a buyer, I'll name who the insurance company is going to be, because the reason that I do this is because if we're putting money into escrow, a title company has two roles. A title agency, which is issuing a policy, issues that policy on behalf of an underwriter, is acting on behalf of that underwriter. Whereas if they are holding money in escrow, that has nothing to do with the underwriter. That has to do with the agency. So if I've got a big chunk of change going into escrow, I want to make sure that I've got a very, very solid title agent, or I've got an office which is run by the underwriter itself. The local companies, Metropolitan and American, that we use in Jackson, I have absolutely no hesitation in using them to escrow funds because they're very solid and they're underwritten. But there are some title agents that are just independent agents who write for a number of companies, and they may not have the ability to pay off in the event that somebody takes funds out of that escrow account.
We've got a lot of split closings. So for whatever reason, it's 99% of the time it has to do with the fact that the agent is in an office that has a relationship with the title company, and therefore they pick that title company for their mortgage title policy.
Well, then as a buyer, I want to make certain, if they're routing it to their own agency, I want to make certain I'm getting the simultaneous issue rate, which means they're going to be doing the work the same exact same work as the company that's issuing the owner's policy, but they're only going to get paid 40% for it. And if they're charging full boat as a buyer, I'd scream like a scalded seagull at something like that.
Yeah, well, I'll have to look next time. I'd have to say probably 25% of our deals right now are split closing.
Have you got a purchaser's closing statement I can take a look at? I can tell you if it's simultaneous issue rate or if it's the full boat.
Yeah, I'd have to have Jackie dig one out. But the other issue that I have is they may be closing the transaction in the community that they are in and not our community where the house is located. And so then you have a timing issue.
That's a whole different issue. We can talk about timing and split closings. Aren't you running out of time here or not?
I haven't gotten any text from Greg.
Okay, yet. All right. I just want to make sure. I'm just looking at my watch.
One of the things I wanted to talk about on title insurance, we'll have to expand this to next week. But in any event, if it has to close, so if it's a late afternoon closing on the buyer's side, because the buyer's side has to close first, then they have to get all the paperwork and the funds, prove that the funds have been received to the title company, the local title
company. Right. Yeah. Well, you got two things going. One, first of all, you have to fund the closing, and that's right. On the buyer's side. So the buyer, they fund it all through the title company that is handling it at the insistence of the buyer or the mortgage company, either one. But at any rate, that's being done somewhere. Let's say it's being done over in the Detroit area, so they're funding over there. And your point is if they're funding it late in the day, then the funds may not reach the seller on right. that day. And that happens actually quite frequently. Now, there are times when we will actually, in those circumstances, where the funding will go to the company, let's say American Title or Metropolitan Title, the funds will actually be directed to the company that is doing the second closing on behalf of the seller, getting the funds of the seller. Uh-huh. That does happen occasionally where the mortgagee and the other title company have an agreement with, in this case, Metropolitan or American, to actually hold those funds until all the documents are in place. You know, it's too bad we should get Ron Ellison or who's your contact at Metro these days?
You mean Midstate?
Or Midstate. I keep saying Metropolitan. I meant Midstate, yeah.
Yeah.
We should get somebody online. We should get somebody online in one of these conversations about title work to help us out.
Well, we're lucky we have those two good title companies. I've got to talk real estate now. So we will, the second half of this title I'd like to talk about is, as an example, the city of Jackson is selling lots and what happens when there's no title insurance given us with those lots. So we'll talk about that next week. In the meantime, let's go over the real estate that that we have available for sale. So, give me one second here. Oh, and while I'm looking this up, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that are happening this week. Tonight there's a candidate forum with the four mayoral candidates. The League of Women Voters is putting on at 6 o'clock. It is a virtual one. And I'm not sure how you access it, so you may want to reach out to the League of Women Voters for information on that. Tomorrow night, I'm doing a community conversation, and we're going to talk about the good things that are happening in Jackson, along with safety and crime update from our chief of police, and then what a few ordinances that we have in place, and then also, or that we have on our agenda in front of City Council. And then also on Thursday and Friday is the Black Town Hall for Juneteenth, which there's three really good topics. Thursday is health inequities and disparities, and then the Black-owned business segment, and then Friday is racial inequities, social justice, and criminal justice reform. So that's some interesting stuff that's happening this week. Properties that I have for sale is a commercial building at 615 West Franklin. And there is a vacant lot that the city owns next to it. So combine that with it, and you could have a nice little doggy daycare, a car detail business. There's a lot of things that you could do in that particular building, and it's $79.9, and the seller is motivated. We have 359 Hillside listed for $86,000. That is a two-bedroom, one-bath house with a garage. Nice little area. Does need some carpet and a little bit of updating, but good price at $86,000. That price has been reduced. Vacant land at the corner of Cooper and Porter for $100,000. A good piece of commercial property with easy access to the highway. Another two-bedroom, one-bath house and a one-car garage at 600 Royal Drive for $106,000. We have 624 St. Clair. It's a three-bedroom, two-bath, four-car garage, oversized yard for $179,900. 8 acres on Skiff Lake with 200 feet of frontage. And a boat launch at 8295 South Jackson Road for $299,000. A beautiful three-bedroom with daylight window basements, four fireplaces, four-and-a-half bathrooms at 777 Bloomfield Boulevard. Great area for $390,000.